Hey, welcome back, Star Wars fans. Welcome back, fans of Rule the Galaxy. We've got another episode of Rule the Galaxy this evening, and it's Chapter 28. Hard to believe we've made it this far. 28 episodes or chapters of Rule the Galaxy, plus some other ones on some different topics, but we'll go into those later. And it's a little bit of a slow week in Star Wars. A lot of times we do a roundtable or discuss a certain movie or a certain show, or maybe a certain book, but yes, we had a Mandalorian little preview there over the weekend. We can talk about that. But really, it was a good night to just talk a little Star Wars and also have a special guest on. We usually have our typical co-host throughout the week, each week, but tonight we're adding Miss Jessica, who goes as Duchess Satine on Twitter, and we've interacted a lot between Rule the Galaxy and her Twitter account, so she'll be with us. And then we've got some of the regular crew. We got Brent Dykeman, we've got Ryan Massengale, and as always, you've got me, Joe Molinaro, sitting in the pilot's chair. So again, you can always follow us at Rule the Galaxy SW on Twitter, and you can email us at rulethegalaxysw@gmail.com. I'll just start my view here on the Zoom board here tonight, and I'll just go through and chat with everybody. I'll start with you, Ryan Massengale. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well. I just want to say a quick shout out to a friend of ours. His older brother, his name's Donnie Manning. His older brother passed away a few days ago, and I just wanted to give him my thoughts and prayers before we start the show tonight.
Hey, you know what? I have a lot of good memories growing up with Donnie back at Old Southport High School. So he's a great family, great, great young man. And yeah, our thoughts and prayers are with him. And it was his brother, Joe. Is that correct? Who passed away?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Donnie, you're in our thoughts and your family. Thanks for bringing that up, Mass. And it's always good to do a shout out, especially for a time like this for a friend. Brent Dykeman, I see your Legion board behind you here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. But you said it's a slow news week. In the Legion world, it's all a buzz because of a couple different things. One, Anakin Skywalker, they just released a little story about all the powers that he's going to have. So he's a new character that's going to show up in November, and they're going to give him the ability to do a force barrier, or any force user can do a force barrier, a la any of those like protective shields, using the force to create a protective shield, which is a new little bomb in the game. And then they had box art of young Lando Calrissian. Nice. And Legion characters soon to be released and playable in the game. But other than that, it's all good.
Well, I'll tell you, I enjoyed it this last week. I got a chance to go visit Brent at his house, and I got to see full-on Legion gaming going on with him. And what was the gentleman's name you were playing against?
Matt Evans. He's the co-admin of the Indianapolis Legion Facebook page.
Okay.
And him and a group of guys get together every Friday night. But he feeds my addiction, because he's got about the same level of addiction to the game as well. So he came over on Sunday, and we played two games. So we played another game after you left, Joe. So it was about 10 or 11 o'clock before he took off.
Well, I can tell you, I watched, and it was blowing my mind. It was way above my skill level, but it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I always say it's like watching a little miniature movie there when you guys are playing. So thanks for having me over. It was a lot of fun. No worries. And can't wait to get the group together to actually do that. So move on to our special guest. And Miss Jessica Johnson, who again goes as Duchess Satine on Twitter. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And I know you mentioned earlier, and in Twitter, you mentioned that there is possibly a podcast coming from you. And so tell us a little bit about yourself, besides just going as Duchess Satine on Twitter, and you know what brought you into Star Wars, and just a little bit, like I said, a little bit about you and your Star Wars background.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. So let's see, what can I say? You did already allude that I do have something coming down the pipeline, and I announced on Twitter today that something is coming. So it's probably no surprise to most of my my followers that that thing is going to be a podcast of my own, since I put out some hints to that a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to see where that goes. I'm really excited to kind of dip my toes into the podcasting game. And right now we're just getting some extra practice and meeting some wonderful people. So I'm very glad to be here. But I don't know. I've been a Star Wars fan my entire life, but gosh, it's only been about 5 months since I became a fan of Star Wars. And that was when I sat down in the midst of quarantine and started a little show called The Clone Wars.
That'll do
and
it.
That just hooked me in a way that, I mean, I had always loved all of the other episodes. I'd seen everything. I'd even seen all of The Mandalorian before.
Okay.
Something that it was special, and I don't know really what it was, but the storytelling that was going on and what George Lucas and Dave Filoni had, it was just something that just never really let go. And so thanks to quarantine, I blazed through Clone Wars and joined Twitter, and as you can probably imagine, gravitated a little bit to a pacifist duchess. And I don't know. It was just something that I joined Twitter. The account started as a role play account, which I had never done before. And then I started getting a lot more followers than I really anticipated. And the account slowly became more of just a general yelling about my love of Star Wars. So people have stuck around and it's been fun to see. So I hope that they like what's coming down the pipeline and hope that they stick around too.
You got it. Brent, go ahead. You got something there.
Yeah, so which order did you watch The Clone Wars in? Because you said it pulled you in. Did you go straight season one through, or did you do the chronological jumping around?
I did neither. I started with the Mandalorian arc.
Okay.
I was told by a friend that loved Obi-Wan and Satine that I needed to watch this. I believe the conversation originally came from my friend was like, "You like Moulin Rouge, right? Did you know that another one of Ewan McGregor's characters has a love interest named Satine who dies in his arms?" And that was what started it. And I went through that arc and was just totally hooked, just completely and utterly hooked. I just couldn't, like, it was just something that felt so right to flesh out not only Obi-Wan, but to have Maul back. And for me, really, I loathed the prequels. I remember being in high school and just lambasting them. I didn't understand Anakin Skywalker. I didn't get his fall to the dark. I didn't understand why Padme would fall for him. And I just felt like Clone Wars, it just fixed every single issue that I had with the prequels and justified it in a way that, you know, when people say, what's, you know, are you an original trilogy, prequel trilogy, sequel trilogy person? I say prequels, but it has to be under the understanding that Clone Wars is an integral part of that.
I 100% agree. Now, you know, I don't know how much you've listened to our show in the past or not, but our good friend Ryan, he was always, I'll just say it, he was an original trilogy guy, and he had a very hard time with the prequels, but we've been pushing him to go back into the Clone Wars. He has a really hard time. When you brought up Maul, he has a really hard time grasping that Maul can come back. But I told him it's well worth it. It's worth the trip. It's worth the journey. So to go along with that,
then
go ahead. No, I'm
sorry. You kind of cut out there, so I wasn't really sure where you stopped.
It's my internet. I'm terrible. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. No. I agree. And it was something that was like, do I buy this? I really don't know if I buy this, but I like that even Dave Filoni has kind of just, like, the way that he crouches it is just, we got away with it. Somehow we got away with it. And I think it was that, you know, everybody makes fun of Maul and his spider legs, but there's a reason why they did that in that episode, because they needed to show that if he's coming back, he's just got to be at the end of his mental capacity. So they gave him the spider legs. They made him crazy. And I think that that was what allowed people to be like, yeah, I could buy this. And then and that was fascinating to me that they were able to do that.
No, I agree. I grew up watching the, or I didn't grow up. My son grew up watching the prequels. I grew up or watched him grow up watching the prequels, and I enjoyed them that way. And then the Clone Wars, like you mentioned, is what really made me a true fan to where, you know, I've got on my wall right here, I've got Captain Rex, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan, piles of them on my shelves, which I'm thinking, I grew up with the original trilogy. I shouldn't be that way. But the Clone Wars brought me back to where that's now probably my favorite part of the saga. So that's great. So let's see real quick. So Duchess Satine obviously stood out to you, and that's where you came up with the name for your account. I think you and I interacted one time on Twitter. One of the characters that's missing in the action figures is a Duchess Satine action figure. That's a must have right there.
It's a travesty.
It is. It is 100%. 100%. So, so great. So you've been in this for 5 months, like the Twitter side, busting through the Clone Wars. Is there something that surprised you to where there's other things you found, other aspects of Star Wars, because it was this mad rush getting through this? Is it Twitter is better or worse than you thought it would be? You know, or is it characters you found that you love more or less now? Something that stands out to you in the short term of being a Star Wars fanatic that you've seen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been a part of other fandoms for quite some time. In fact, I will say I got into Star Wars mainly because I became a Stargate fan in high school. I don't know if anybody's a Stargate fan here, but that was my entrance into science fiction. And then I watched Star Wars at that point because I felt like, well, I'm a sci-fi fan now. I need to hit the classics. And so I've been in fandom for a very long time. I think that every fandom kind of has its own little quirks. And I think that Star Wars can be very contentious. But I also think that that's mainly because we're in a franchise that's getting new material. New material is always going to be contentious. The fandoms that aren't contentious are usually the ones who are kind of dormant or even dead, the ones that have had the material and aren't really expecting anything new, and people start to maybe come to a little bit divide. There's definitely a divide on Twitter and on other sites where Star Wars fans hang out, and that's always a little bit difficult to deal with. But at the same time, you can just always see fans' passion for whatever they're watching, and I think that that's a great thing.
There's a divide in our group.
Is there?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is. So not only the mall prequel kind of things, but we're also next week our movie review or roundtable is about The Last Jedi. And
oh boy,
we have in the group half that think The Last Jedi is one of the best Star Wars movies, and then we have the other half that think that The Last Jedi is one of the worst Star Wars movies. So it's going to kind of be a free-for-all. It's one of those old wrestling cage matches, but we're looking forward to it because I don't think we'll be yelling and screaming and cussing at each other, but I do think we'll have good conversations about it. So yes.
And how funny that it's one or the other. It really is. I find very few people who are moderate in their views of The Last Jedi.
That's a fact. It's one way or the other.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. So while we have you here, Miss Duchess Satine, and we have Massengale, who just finished reading Master and Apprentice, correct?
Correct.
So
yesterday.
I thought it would be a good time to Mass said he wanted to talk a little bit about Master and Apprentice. I love Claudia Gray. I love what she does. I've loved Bloodline, Lost Stars, Master and Apprentice, great books. And so Mass, being a non-prequel guy and then going and reading something like this and having the Duchess here, who probably had just interacted with Obi-Wan or would have interacted with him shortly after that, tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that book and the prequel connection to it.
I thought the book was great. sent you a text that I was like, this is fantastic. I mean, what was so good about it is that most of the other Star Wars books that I've read were just a story, but this one had, like, it was three or four layers deep. I mean, there was so many things going on during the story, and it kind of blew me away. I've never been a Dooku fan, but I actually want to read that book now, just because, based on the stuff that Qui-Gon was talking about, how he learned from Dooku. So it was really interesting. It was a really good book.
So somebody likes Dooku.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would agree with you. I'm a book fanatic, and I went through the audiobook of Dooku Jedi Lost, and I thought that was fabulous with him, with the Saz Ventress, that whole storyline. So you're right, Mass. I think taking Master and Apprentice and partnering it up with that Dooku book, you get a lot. It's more things that add to the prequel times. Go ahead, Jessica.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. This is by far my favorite book that I've read, and I have a job where I'm able to listen to some audiobooks, so I've been able to get through quite a few of them in the last 5 months as well, so that's been fun. I love Claudia Gray. I love that this book is so focused on not only, you know, I think that there are a lot of books where it's kind of like, you know, you get one character, you know, you get a book featured, you know, that features on Leia or, you know, somebody like that, but I love that this is such an exploration of Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon's relationship. I love the lore that's introduced and the prophecy. It really just is interesting to kind of flesh out that period in their life, since we really don't have much to it. It's by far my favorite in terms of original characters as well. I think that Rael Averroes is one of the greatest characters that have been introduced in the books. Mm. I want to see him in live action.
Right.
Agreed. Mass, go ahead.
Well, I think we're going to talk about it later, but I really want to, Claudia Gray, her High Republic books that are coming out. I'm so looking forward to them now. That's the first book, I mean, not just the Star Wars book, but the first book that I've read in a while that had so many layers to it. And I'm just really looking forward to, like, what else she has to put out there. And she's got, from what I looked up, she has several Star Wars books out there. And I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I've got so many books in my mind. Which one of the High Republics, do any of the three of you know which High Republic book she's going to be involved with? Or is she... Because I know I mentioned Bloodline, I know I mentioned Lost Stars, but I can't remember the High Republic one that she's involved with. I know Charles Soule's writing a High Republic book, but I haven't matched all that up yet, because it's still, of course, in the future. So
it's called Into the Dark.
Into the Dark.
There we go. According to Professor Google.
I think as we move along, you know, we've had this discussion on the show before. People romanticize about the original trilogy because it's now 40 years old or so, and people can say, oh, look at my childhood, my memories. And when, like you mentioned, Jessica, about how the prequels were lambasted in the late 90s, early 2000s, they're now being romanticized by that group that grew up with them, right? So I think it's going to continue to do that. And hopefully the sequels will have that kind of feel as well. I don't, any of you guys think that the sequels 20 years from now will be looked at that way?
I do. I definitely do. And that's not to say, I personally, I'm not really a sequel fan, but I think that what will happen is that as you keep going, people get more used to the ideas that were presented. They Yes. start to try to justify it in their own minds. And then you also will have younger fans who they grew up with it. They didn't know anything else. They accept it much more readily because that's what they got from the start. And in my head, I also have hopes that maybe in the same way that Filoni was able to justify the prequels with the Clone Wars, I would love to see a TV show or something that showcases the rise of the first Order and really tries to justify the character development that we saw.
I think we're in 100% agreement on that across the board. I think we've all talked about that, seeing the growth of Luke Skywalker after Return of the Jedi leading to the sequel trilogy, seeing the growth of Kylo Ren from a young person to his role, and seeing the birth of the First Order. Go ahead, Brent.
I was just going to say, like, it took, what, 4 or 5 years before they released the Clone Wars movie from when the Clone Wars came out, and then the series came out after that, right? So it took 4 or 5 years to build up to the Clone Wars series to fill in those gaps. And then that ran for so long, yada, yada, yada. But what I'm getting at is I believe it's going to, maybe 3 or 4 years, they will have enough space in between that they can do something like that. Like right now, it's too new. The wounds are too fresh for our friend Mass. And you'll get some of that reaction. You'll get some of that negative reaction. So it's not worth it to do it now, but give it some time, throw something out there. Just like you said, I think it will take something like a Clone Wars for the, I like the idea of the First Order, the rise of the First Order. I like the idea of the Skywalker Academy, but I don't think they'll do that one. I think they want to get away from Skywalker. But it'll take something like that to try to pull everybody back.
I just want to see Ben Solo's obsession with his grandfather. I want to see that play out in a way that justifies it, because I have to believe that if that was known to Luke, if a legacy that you want to follow in, but something really kept him there, and I want that to be explored.
I agree 100%. I think we can only hope that it continues to grow the story and nurture it to where we all fall in love with it and wipe away the problems that we have with it here or there. You know, I mean, there's a lot more good than there is bad. And unfortunately, right now, a lot of us focus on the bad, me included. I mean, I do. I mean, every time Mary Poppins comes out in Last Jedi, I freak out, but I shouldn't. I should just move on and say, okay, there's lots of that movie I do like. So I like to bounce around. I like to hit a few topics. And with my internet being so crappy, I like to make sure I let you guys talk more than me. I saw an article this week saying that the direction of Star Wars in the future is small screen instead of big screen. And I think we all know that big screens, movie theaters, are having problems anyway. Around the board and just – you know, I'll start with Mass, and then we'll go Mass, Jessica, and Brent. Your thoughts, is Star Wars with Disney Plus, is that the direction we're going to go? We're going to see maybe even movies released there in the future instead of just series? Or do you think there's still a glimmer of hope that some movie theaters will one day again host Star Wars movies?
Well, I think there's an absolute glimmer of hope that they'll be back on the big screen at some point. But I, for the near future, I think, you know, Disney Plus is where it's all going to go. I do think there's going to be movies released there. You know, there's going to be I think there's going to be a ton of new series that come through there. And I like it. You know, I've got a really big TV, so, you know, I can watch that all day. But yeah, Disney Plus, I'm hoping that it's not all like Mulan where it's going to cost me $30 a shot to watch a Star Wars movie, but I still haven't seen that, but I'd like to. Still waiting for the, you know, to go down a little bit. I think Disney Plus is going to have a lot of new content.
Okay.
In the near future. Yeah.
Jessica, how about you? Your thoughts on that topic?
Well, I think that the benefit at the moment was that regardless of COVID, it had already been announced that we weren't going to be seeing movies for a while. You know, Kathleen Kennedy kind of mentioned we're taking a step back, we're reevaluating, we're just kind of mapping out where we're going. And so I could see maybe that gets pushed out a little bit, but it's not really changing their big screen aspirations at the moment anyway. They've got Mandalorian, which is doing fantastically, going into a third season. I think that with COVID, it wouldn't surprise me if they got another animated show on the table, because that's the stuff that can be done from home. Voice actors are just getting more jobs than they had before. So I could really see them pushing into that in addition to Bad Batch coming out. But I think that it's, you know, we just got so saturated with a Star Wars movie coming out every single winter for the last couple of years that it just kind of feels nice to sit back. And I love that Mandalorian, people went into it, well, we went into season one without any expectations, which is the reason why it was so, you know, people accepted it because they weren't, their expectations weren't dashed or anything exactly. Like that. I think that season two might be a little bit more contentious because we've had a whole year to speculate. So you can expect that. But I also really like that people went into Mandalorian with a more moderate, with more moderate expectations in terms of, like, they weren't expecting a huge big screen spectacle.
Agree.
And so I think that it was a little bit easier for people to rally around that as well. I'm glad to see that.
Yep. Me too. Brent, how about you? Your thoughts?
I think The Mandalorian proved that you can make a big screen style TV show, if that makes sense. So with the volume and with the computer or the video game engine that allows them to create the backdrops, so they don't necessarily have to go on location, and they can create Ilium or Hoth or whichever icy planet we were talking about, whichever one you can create that. You don't have to, like, go there, or you don't have to spend fake snow or shoot ice through something. I think the practicality all screen allows them to have a lot more creativity in that small screen world. So yeah, I think TV is the way to go. And I think I just saw an article again. I don't know how to trust anything on the internet.
Me either.
I'm a French model, right? Bonjour. Like, I don't trust anything on the internet that I see.
It's all true.
Right. All of it. Right. So, but there was some story that, and I think Ewan McGregor was on Corden or one of the late night shows, and he confirmed that they have set filming for Obi-Wan. So I believe Obi-Wan is set to film
in March.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And so and I think the Cassian Andor also has a filming date as well, as what I saw.
No, I think your key point there was exactly right. We now have it to where we can do big movie look on a TV setup, and face it, when most people have 50, 60, 70 inch TVs now, it's a lot different than when we were growing up and everybody was on a 21 inch or a 19 inch TV. It was hard to see Star Wars in that. So speaking of Obi-Wan and the series coming up, that's probably the thing I'm most excited about on Disney Plus. But Miss Duchess, Miss Jessica, we've already heard possible Anakin's. We've also heard possible Qui-Gon, possible Cody. Do you think there's going to be any flashbacks or any talking to a Duchess Satine when he's sitting there by himself in his hut where he's reminiscing of those good old days of Love Lost?
I sure hope so. I think that for me, those are the three characters that I really want to see. Qui-Gon and Anakin and Satine. I think that they really are the people who define Obi-Wan's past. I think that I think that it would be a lovely addition to whatever they have planned. And Duchess Satine was modeled after Kate Blanchett. She has said before that she would like to be in Star Wars. So they've got somebody who's willing.
Wow.
I would love to see them take advantage of that.
She would fit that role fairly perfectly.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, she would do a great job with that. So we did get a little bit more Mando this week. I'll just throw out there one. Brent loved the last time when the speeder bikes were jumping off the ledge. We saw more of that. And And then to go on top of that, it looked like, did we have a troop transport driven by Kara and Mando and Grief in that right now? Is that what I saw?
I didn't see Mando in that, but I did see the blue guy that was the bounty hunter stuck his head up in the front of that. So after they go, it seems like after they go over the edge and they
shove the speeder bike into the mountain, which is fantastic. right? Like, violence on it is a great... Anyways.
No. NASCAR and Star Wars, yeah.
But they're trying to break something out, or he might be in a separate... I just didn't notice him in the car.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Mass.
I have a question, because I'm on season 4 of the Clone Wars now, but was Obi-Wan like 15, Duchess Satine on Obi-Wan? I'm trying to get the timeline.
Okay. This is, there has been some drama
in Obi-Wan
fandom
correct.
This last week, because Pablo Hidalgo's trivia book came out and mm-hmm. said that Obi-Wan was only 15 years old when he and Satine were on Mandalore. Mm-hmm. That's hard for me to reconcile with what we've always thought. I think that definitely contradicts Master and Apprentice. It doesn't explicitly contradict it. You could say that it happened before that, but there are so many parts in Master and Apprentice where if that had happened before, you would expect to have some rumination on it. I really don't think Claudia Gray wrote it thinking that it had already happened. I mean, they protect another young female ruler of a planet. Wouldn't have been, you know, comments in that book had she known that they were planning on making it happen that early. So that's something that's a little bit hard when you just, you know, those kind of trivia books can't come out and you're never, you know, people make mistakes. It's hard to keep all of canon correct. I think that what happened, this is my guess, is that the only piece of canon information that we have related to the Mandalorian Civil War is that it happens about 20 years before the Clone Wars. 20 years before the Clone Wars would have been about when Obi-Wan was 15. So I think that they probably saw that and just said he was 15. And then kind of forgot that Master and Apprentice exists and it does have implications for the story. So I think that he was more, Master and Apprentice, he's 17 years old. I suspect that he was 18 to 19 when they were on Mandalore.
Okay. Does anybody else feel like we have a female version of Alfie on the show right now? He is bringing straight knowledge. Oh, Nick.
Nick Shesky. You got to throw Nick Shesky in there, too. Okay. Nick is the encyclopedia.
Yeah. You were bringing straight knowledge there, Jessica. I appreciate it. Go ahead, Mass.
Because I think I was reading a little piece of that book, and it confused me because it said that he was an apprentice for another 10 years, and I'm thinking, was he an apprentice till he was like 27? I mean, that's not really how it works. Phantom Menace, he's 25?
Okay. Which I believe, is that a change? Was that originally when the prequels came out, was he supposed to be 20? I've heard that before, but I don't remember.
I thought it was right in that range. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about this fandom, though. I mean, look at the minutiae. We're deciding what age Obi-Wan was at this time. There's a lot of other fandoms who are like, I don't care, just show me an action scene, right? And we're worried about what age Obi-Wan was in a book and in a prequel.
I just, 15 years is a pretty long apprentice, I would imagine. I mean, didn't he start when he was like 12? Didn't he go to Qui-Gon when he was 12 or something?
That's what the EU says. That hasn't been recanonized yet, but I suspect that they're not looking to change that. But I suspect that things like Anakin becoming a knight much earlier, I mean, they're dealing with the Clone Wars. I think that they probably pushed a lot of Padawans into becoming knights. Seems like, well, that seems like a long time, but it has been solidified that he's 25 in The Phantom Menace.
There we go.
I thought that was great in Master and Apprentice, where they were talking about that, you know, Obi-Wan was 3 when he became a youngling or whatever that was, but and he was considered old. And then, you know, the other guy was 5, and he was like, no, he's too old.
Right.
And then Anakin's 9, and that just was like, whoa. I mean, it really shed some light for me. I loved that book. It was great.
It was. Brent, what do you got?
Oh,
I thought you were saying something. I apologize.
No. Okay. No. As you know, I am a visual guy. So all of this book talk is like you're speaking foreign languages to me. However, the dark side of mass being very sarcastic and needling me a couple weeks ago, saying that there's no hope for you and just give up on it. It's never going to work. I started listening to the books, and then you told me to start with The Rebels, which is A New Dawn. So I downloaded that one, and then I saw you guys reviewed the Bane books. So in the process of 1 week, I listened to all three Bane books because those things were pretty cool, and they roped me in. I'm going to A New Dawn, but here's the thing. When you're 40 years old, you've been a fan of Star Wars and just the visual. There are hundreds of books that I have no knowledge of that provide this background that you guys are talking about. Like, I didn't even care how old Anakin or Obi-Wan was in The Phantom Menace. I knew he was like, yeah, 20s is what I was thinking. Teens, 20s. Didn't even impact me. Never even like thought about like him having a romantic relationship with somebody at the world. That happens. So, I didn't even know that was even an argument that came up. But I'm just sitting here learning and absorbing. But as you know, I'm a visual guy. So this is all foreign language to me.
I understand. But there's some great things out there. And Mass, I'll get to you in 1 second. Jessica, I'll have to ask you, even though it's not canon right now, have you read the Darth Bane books?
No, I have not. That's on my list.
Do it. It's fun.
I've been able to get through Master and Apprentice. I did Dark Disciple, which is
fabulous.
You know, if you're more visual, that would be a good one to do. New Dawn, that was good. The Kenobi novel. Anything else? I think that's about it. Oh, and Bloodline.
The Bane one goes deep into the Sith side, so it's like it gives you some of that background of the dark side. And it honestly, so this is one of the things that's not a review of that, but like, so I'm gonna throw my little two cents in. It was written after The Phantom Menace, and it was written after the prequels. So I see a lot of influences of the way that the guy wrote about the way Sith came about with the way that the Jedi's came about. So there's a lot of synergy and almost very similar and similarities. And I can't say that he wasn't impacted by the prequels to be able to write it that way. But and there are some pretty good battle scenes too. And as Mass said, the books have like lightsaber noises and like music in the background. And it does become a little bit easier to read when you have that. Now, I will say the last thing I'll say about it is The New Dawn, the Audible version. One of the characters in there sounds like Gilbert Gottfried. So it gets him. So the voice the guy uses, I hear Gilbert Gottfried. And I can't think of anything else other than like this, like, I don't know, hunchback decrepit guy with a Gilbert Gottfried's voice. Even though that's probably not the way that it's pictured, that's what the voice gives me. So yeah.
Every time I think of Gilbert Gottfried, I think of Beverly Hills Cop 2 when they come and give him fake parking tickets. That's my wife's car. And then he cusses her out on the phone. There's people out there with machetes and you're coming after me for parking tickets. So we'll jump around here a little bit more. This week there was, again, from that book that you mentioned, Jessica, by I think Pablo, that's the Star Wars book. Snoke was a Strand cast. He probably didn't even know he was a Strand cast. Like, he thought he was a live entity that was maybe born or what have you, but did you guys see that? Or and then also in Mandalorian, do you remember when Quill said Baby Yoda was not a Strand cast? Does that sound familiar? Do you guys, Did you guys hear anything about that or whatever about Snoke being a strand cast? That's kind of the new thing I guess they're using for cloning.
I did not hear anything about that. I do remember the Quill saying that, and I wasn't sure what he was talking about in Mandalorian, but I did not get that far into the pages of the new book see that.
It was just weird to see that it was brought up in Mandalorian, and then it was brought up in this book that's what Snoke was. And then I'll give credit to a little bit to Rebel Force Radio. I heard them talking about this, but then also in the new book, supposedly, George Lucas had plans for Luke to die in episode 8, much like happened in episode 8. But looking back on that, Kathleen Kennedy from reports, when asked about Lucas and what he wrote, what they gave him, she said he didn't give him anything, that he didn't provide him with any kind of storyline about that. And that, so do you think that's more of Disney and the story group coming back and saying, hey, there were a lot of people mad about the way Luke died, let's just say George kind of threw that at us? Or do you think there's some legitimacy to that topic there? I'll take anybody. Mass, you want to hit that one?
I think there's probably some legitimacy. I can't even speak. There's some legitimacy to that. I think he probably had treatments for just about everything, some origins. But, you know, on Twitter, they keep talking about, maybe it won't bring Rian Johnson now. I think everybody knew at some point during the sequels that Luke was going to die. I don't think that it mattered. That's not the problem that I had with the movie anyway. But
Jessica,
I lost my train of thought.
You're so right, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, It definitely brought up a lot of discussion. I think that the biggest reaction that I see, the people who, I think that it was a lot of sequel lovers who said, oh, look, Luke was going to die anyway. And then I feel like the pushback then was, yeah, but it's how he died. It's what they did with his character. That's the line that I see
and
people following. But I feel like, in terms of was this Lucas's plan? I think it probably was. And the reason why I say that is because it's always been this grand mythological story. He admitted in 1979 that he had treatments for all 9 movies. That was the plan. And I have to believe that when the saga spans as far as he was planning, I have to believe that he knew that his hero was going to meet his end.
I 100% agree. And like Matt said, Luke dying, and especially the way he sacrificed himself at that end of that movie and the way he played the First Order in Kylo, I had no problem with that whatsoever. I thought it was very well done. And to see him give up his life and his force to be able to save everybody else, that's Luke. That's what everybody expected of Luke. I, like Mass also said, I think one of the problems was that Luke just was a little too grumpy for, I think, everybody. So anyway, my internet's bad. So Brent, hit us with something good on that.
No, I mean, I think they all were going to die eventually at some point, right? So all the main characters, because if you're going to move forward, whether or not this is the end of the saga or whatever, I think after 40 years, everybody dies out, right? I mean, they're humans. They're not Chewbacca's or whatever Yoda species is, right? We don't live to be 900 or 250. We, as humans, have a life cycle that's a little bit shorter than everybody else's. So he was going to die. I have no problem with his story arc either. I'm one of the ones that's okay with the character that was created in The Last Jedi. I can see him falling off and I can see it happening. I really have no problem with whether George Lucas came up with it or not. I would Kathleen Kennedy say that he didn't really give us anything, because Bob Iger said in his book, which was released when he did his autobiography a couple years ago, he said that Lucas had something, but we decided to go against what Lucas said. So why don't you just, Kathleen Kennedy, why don't you just say, hey, like, yeah, he gave us some stuff, but we decided to go a different direction. You don't have to say, well, he really didn't give us much of anything, which that may be her way of saying, a nice way of saying, hey, he really didn't give us much of anything, and like, we went a different direction. I don't know. I just feel like Iger said it in his book. This statement says that he had Luke dying. Okay. But then she comes out and says, hey, that's not necessarily true, and he really didn't give us much of anything, which, so why did she feel the need to make that statement?
Yeah, I don't know. I was pilfering that off another podcast, so I apologize. So, High Republic. Sounds like we're all, you know, masses into the books. Jessica, you're starting to get into the books. I'm a voracious book reader of everything Star Wars. Brent is starting to dip his toe in the water on that. High Republic has come out now. Okay, we've seen the main characters. Mass, you brought it up. I read the article that the Jedi's in the High Republic, the Jedi in the High Republic can sense or feel the Force in a different way. And then today they released a bunch of what the Padawans look like. Any thoughts on the High Republic? Are you looking forward to it? Are there parts that you're excited about? Or is this kind of, I think Jessica, you mentioned it earlier about the new and the change is always scary. Where do we all stand on this? Any thoughts on the High Republic? Because it's the next big thing. I mean, I hate to tell everybody, but that's what Disney is focusing on. I feel like the Disney Plus and the High Republic. So any thoughts? Are you looking forward to it? What do you like about it? Hit me with something. I don't care who. Go ahead, Jessica.
I mean, I'm really excited. I think that it's been a while since, you know, we've explored a different era. It's been a while since we've had multiple books coming out. You know, these are novels. This is comic books. Like, you know, it'll be kind of fun to explore this in its own, you know, as its own little entity. I see why they're focusing on this. I'm really excited to see, kind of this idea of how are things different. I'm all about the culture, politics, those kinds of things that we get in Star Wars, and it'll be really interesting to see what kind of view do we get of this period. I think that right now, you know, it's the High Republic. We kind of think of it as, you know, it's more of a time of peace, but there's kind of a romanticized notion of it. And now we're getting these kind of big statements about, I mean, there's this really big threat, and I think that it'll be fun to add to the saga in a way that's not completely connected to all of the films, the TV shows, but I assume we'll have some kind of significance in relation to the universe at large.
Well, for example, I was very much into the EU novels, like Shadows of the Empire and the New Jedi Order and different things that came out back before the changeover. So I have characters, you know, I have action figures of those characters, and they were just in books. So I'm hoping it'll have that same effect here. Mass, hit me up with some stuff on High Republic.
I'm really looking forward to it. I liked all the, I'm really interested in the Wookiee Jedi. I want to know all about that. I'm hoping it's a deep dive into the Force. You know, I mean, like, to explain it more, I mean, because really Star Wars is about what draws you in is the Force. I mean, what is it? You know, how can they do these things? And if hopefully they'll explain, you know, go into more and more detail about that. Like every character, you know, they see the Force differently. The Wookiee sees it as, you know, he is like a leaf on the forest trees, and the Force is the characters is a river that flows into a big ocean. Everybody sees it differently, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about that. And that character, the drawings of the characters look great, so I'm pretty excited about it. And I've always thought that we should go back into the past.
Nope, I agree. Brent, go ahead.
So here's some of my headcanon, right? So this is my personal headcanon, and this is, again, from the visual world, not colluded by the dark side of the EU and the books. But I always thought that people would see the Force differently because you are different individuals, and I always thought that they would have to experience it in a different way. And I think, like, I've always thought that there are people that would probably be better at this aspect of the Force. So in my personal headcanon, there are people that are better attackers. There are people that are better defenders. There are people that are healers. There are people that are sensitive and can see visions. Like, there's different aspects of the Force. So, and I've always thought, well, these people have all of these abilities, right? So are these, they will have a different set of abilities because they were gifted that ability. Where the Force is stronger for them in that ability. So I've always thought that that was the case. So having somebody bring it up, and I guess, like, learning about how they look at it, and, like, as the metaphor that they've created for each of their individual people and the planets that they come from and the world, those types of things, it'll be interesting to find. But the other thing that came to mind, and the sarcastic part of me is, like, that just reminded me of Captain Planet, right? Because by our powers combined.
Oh my gosh. We have a Captain Planet reference.
Yes, because we had the wind, we have the water, we have the fire, and we have the heart. By our powers combined.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
No, like,
oh, sweet Jesus.
It's fine. It's fine. That's my take on it. But at the same time, I've always thought that that was the way that the Force was.
Yeah.
So it's good that I guess it's good that there's some, they're going to go deeper into it. But I've said this before. Yes, it's good that there's books. Yes, it's good that there's comics. Make something visual. Make it a comic book, or not a comic, make it a cartoon. Make something with a visual story as well, to try to entertain and catch that part of the fan base. Not everybody's the book reader. Not everybody's the comic book reader. Some of us are just in that visual world, and I just prefer to consume my stuff in the visual way.
I think what they're also looking with High Republic is, I think you have a really good chance for a lot of good cosplay outfits. Looking at the photos and the drawings they've given us so far, these people look pretty good, and they got some good outfits going on there. Got some swag. I mean, really. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you again with my bad internet. I want you talking, me listening. I'll start. We'll go Ryan. We'll go Jessica. We'll finish with Brent. If there's one thing you could create, if there's one thing that you're looking at seeing over the next few years that you'd like to see, I don't care if it's visual, if it's book, comic, if it's toys, whatever, what's something that you would say, I have to have, I want to see, I would do anything I could to make this happen in Lucasfilm/Disney over the next 3 or 4 years? Ryan, I'll start with you. Give me some idea, storyline, or just characters, or whatever you want. Hit me.
Well, I've always wanted, ever since I read Tales of the Jedi comic books, I have always wanted to see the Sith Jedi war that took place like 2,000 years ago. I just think that would be a great trilogy. You know, I think the characters would be great, and you just want to see the Sith when there was plenty of them. And I just have always wanted to see that.
Nomi Sunrider and all that, right? You're talking about that time frame?
Yes, correct.
So where does that fall? So Joe, and I'm going to go with Jessica because you guys are both the experts in this world. Where does that fall in the timeline with Bane?
I believe that all happens before Bane. All that happens because he gets Freedon Nadd's holocron in his book, which Freedon Nadd was part of these Sith Jedi wars before that.
So there was a Sith Jedi war, and then there's another 1,000 years. So there's a Sith Jedi war. I'm just correct. Is that the way that it's rolling?
Somewhat, yes.
Okay, so it's cyclical. It's kind of like
the real world. Every 50 to 100 years, there's a world war, right?
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that my brain was, because when you're saying Sith Jedi war, the entire first book of the Bane was a Sith Jedi war.
I agree. It can get confusing. Like you said, it's a dark, dark place out there. Jessica, how about you? Now, it could be Duchess of Teen stuff, or it could be something else that you're romanticizing about, that you're thinking about, and say, if I had my druthers, if I could go to Kathleen and Filoni and Favreau and say, here's what I want, what would it be for you?
Well, as long as I'm dreaming, the one thing that I do want is Obi-Wan and Satine's year on the run. I want that in. I don't care how it comes. I think that it's been mentioned that, you know, Filoni wouldn't be averse to doing kind of smaller, contained, arcs of things that are kind of Clone Wars inspired animation. I'd love to see a mini series of that. I'd love to see it either brought up in the Kenobi show. I'd love a comic book series or a novel. That I think that any of those could really tell the story well. It's contained enough, but it has a lot of good content. But the one thing more generally that I've always wanted that I feel like is just kind of to me kind of feels like a black hole is I really want exploration of what kind of relationship to the Force can a non-Force sensitive person have.
Ooh, I like that.
I feel like we got a little bit of that with Chirrut in where we're just not really sure, but I feel like what I loved about Clone Wars was that there were some instances where we saw, like even in the very first episode, you have Yoda talking to the clones and telling them that they can use the Force to kind of calm themselves and to center themselves. And I've always, after seeing that very first episode, I've always wanted to know more about what a non-Force sensitive person can expect if they believe in the Force.
I really love that topic. And actually, to kind of tie some other things in together, both my brother Tony, who's been on the show quite a bit, and my cousin Nick, who's on the show quite a bit, they are very involved with their church. They're youth pastors. They are working for the church. And we've talked about this, and I told them I would like them to just do a show one time here where you compare the Force with religion, because you have regular everyday people like myself who go to church or I pray or what have you. Is that tapping in to a Force thing? You know what I'm saying? So I see where you're going with this, like telling the clones to calm themselves and center themselves. Is that really more just like a metaphysical thing, or is it all of us can tap into it? So I know it was down another avenue, but I like where you're going with that completely.
I think that we're closer than you might think, because okay. I've got a lot of the same themes that run through my head when it comes to that sort of topic.
Good. Okay. So Brent, besides having the world of Legion come to your house and you guys have everybody play all at one time, what's something, which by the way, I can't wait to take you to Celebration and you meet up with all the Legion people and just like go all out with a battle there. So anyway, what would you want to see visually in Star Wars in the next few years if you could talk to Filoni, Favreau, Kennedy, or whoever?
Visually. It's got to, don't throw me with books, man. Don't get me with that. Don't make me read. don't educate me and make me read. I honestly, like, the biggest thing is, like, I'd like to see that High Republic, right? I as excited as you guys are to try to read the books and get into the books, I'm as excited to hope and pray that there is something that comes out of those movies, or comes out as a movie, comes out as something visual from that, because I think that's interesting. I hear a lot of people talk, and I never really played the Knights of the Old Republic, which is like one of the original role-playing games, which is like the Darth Revan, which goes all the way back to the beginnings, I guess. So we're talking early, like he was good to bad to good to bad, like you flip-flop all the time. So there's something about that era, the Darth Revan, the High Republic. Personally, because that's just the way that I consume. But if you really, like, I'm going to see if I can go off the wall, because I was the one who brought up the cannibal Ewoks. In The Mandalorian.
Which I'm still hoping for, by the way.
So, Duchess, if you didn't hear on one of the previous, it was like, you know, I was comparing the Jawas because I thought he was going to worship the Mudhorn Egg when they brought the Mudhorn Egg to him, but they lopped it off and started like just devouring it. So it was a completely different take on the Jawas. You saw them doing something different and kind of experience the culture in a different way. So I'm wondering, can you throw the Ewoks in there and give them a little spin that we haven't seen before? And then everybody started taking that as like a cannibal Ewok or an Ewok eating some bones and having like blood dripping down his face.
You're going to ruin my little teddy bears.
Yeah, no, see, that's what I'm talking about, right? Give him a different twist.
You'd still buy one if it had like blood on it and stuff like that.
So let's see. I honestly, just because I'm in the middle of building. Younglings arc where they send them into the to go get the Kyber crystals and try to find the Kyber crystals, and they have about a 6-episode arc towards the end of the Clone Wars, and there's a Wookiee like youngling Jedi that goes in there, so I would really like to see something Wookiee based, something in Kashyyyk, and just kind of what are these people and who are these people.
I like it, and I think that Wookiee made a wooden lightsaber handle, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yes, he did. Yes, yep. He did. Yep.
So, yeah. And when I was just in Galaxy's Edge and I took Star Tours, I went through Kashyyyk. That was very cool. Go ahead, Mass.
I would be really surprised if nothing visual came from the High Republic. I think something will come out of that. I don't know if it would be a cartoon or some live action or a movie, but I believe something from there will come out. Visual for you.
So what I've heard was, and this is all on that I'm a French model, bonjour, the internet rumor mill, but what I've heard was and read or somewhere is that they're testing they're using the books and the comics as a test market to see how it'll fly before they develop it into something that's bigger. Like they've committed to, I think, what is it, like 10 stories, like they're like 5 novels and like 3, like it is a massive undertaking.
Yeah.
It's a huge amount of print material that they've committed to this era.
It reminds me of the New Jedi Order that I read that was, I think, 25 books long, and it was a great series. Maybe a little too much. 25 books was a lot, but I think they have that plan of having 2, 3, 4 years of novels and comics to really fill up this universe during that time frame.
And I think that as I heard is that then that'll be a springboard, if it is successful, that could then be a springboard into a new saga, for lack of a better word.
Gotcha.
That makes a lot of sense. It's the amount of money being put into 10 books is still going to be vastly less expensive than committing to a TV show or a film right away.
Agreed. And they don't have to take them to a set, right? Like in COVID world, like we're living in, it's much easier to get a book written than to do that. Go ahead, Mass. You had another point.
Yeah. Did anybody hear the rumor that like Keanu Reeves wants to be Revan? He wants to play Revan. Like that. I actually read that somewhere.
I did as well, that he's thrown out his name and said I would, if that ever happened, he'd like to play that role, which would be fine. After watching the John Wick movies that you got me to watch, I would love to see him in a Revan role. So, I don't know. Maybe, you know, but then again, Star Wars has always been the place where they take the unknowns and make them the knowns. So,
but you've got people like Rahul Kohli, who's kind of blowing up Twitter right now with his own campaign. Not campaign, his jokes about wanting to be Ezra from Rebels.
Yeah, but that was just trolling, right? That was confirmed he was just trolling everybody because somebody said it and he's like, all right, I'll mess with these people's heads. Yep. And he'll take pictures and be like, ooh, look, and people will blow up because everybody just reacts to this little nugget and thinks every little nugget is truth. And overreacts.
But think about what a good move that is for his career.
Huge.
In that Disney can now see that he would be very well received by the fan base. So if they have any thoughts on that, that's a home run for them if they go ahead with that casting.
And if we're not, if we're, you know, Rosario Dawson 3-4 years ago was the first one who put out there, I would love to play Ahsoka. And let's face it, unless somebody throws us a curveball in the next month, there's a good chance that's going to happen. I mean, I don't know until, I guess, Filoni wrote episode or chapter 5. So I'm sure we'll find out during that one. So I'll tell you what, guys, we've gone through a ton of stuff. I wanted to keep tonight short because we're not doing one of those movie roundtables. I'll go around the horn one more time. Any other topic you want to hit on, anything we haven't hit before we close up shop? And then we're going to give Miss Jessica, Duchess Satine, a chance to promote where you can follow her and track her down, all that kind of stuff. Mass, any other parting thoughts, ideas, anything like that before we move on and finish up chapter 28 of Rule the Galaxy?
I had a really good time tonight. It was really nice to meet you, Duchess. And Brent, you are my favorite.
That is fabulous. Brent, how about you? Any last closing comments, any parting words, any topics you want to hit on?
I can't upstage that. I mean, he just called me the best, my favorite French model. Like, I'm bonjour. May the force be with you. No, it's been fun. Thank you for joining us, Duchess. I hope you enjoyed yourself and are mildly entertained with the sarcasm and the crazy antics that take place during a podcast of the Rule of the Galaxy. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun. So I think that you don't have to be crazy to do a podcast, but I think that it probably helps. So we will see. I've already mentioned that I should have something coming down the line. I don't know if I'll have the certain brand of craziness that really makes for a good podcast, but right now people can still find me on Twitter at Manda_Satine. Not sure if that'll be changing or not as we look forward to promoting a podcast, but that's where I'll be for at least a little while longer, and hope to see everybody around.
Well, I can tell you it has been our pleasure, and thank you. Like the guy said, thanks for putting up with our craziness, and we're just a bunch of goofballs that love Star Wars. And when I saw you on Twitter mentioning that you wanted to get into this, I thought whether you're part of what we do or you go do your own thing, I at least wanted to get to know you personally over our show instead of just us bouncing back tweets back and forth about how much we love Obi-Wan and Satine. So thank you so very much for being a part of it. It's been great. And I look forward to helping promote your future plans and what you're going to do. And you know what, guys? Chapter 28 in the books. We'll be back next week, bigger and better than ever. So again, follow us at Rule the Galaxy SW on Twitter. And until next week, may the Force be with you.